As the king of sales, I meet a lot of salespeople. And one major complaint that I have heard more now than ever is that selling has stopped being fun. You dread going on a sales call with a lead instead of feeling excited about it. You expect the worst when you see an email from one of your prospects or customers. And instead of feeling pumped about your product, you can't wait to get in the car and drive home. Is that you? Let's get rid of self-blame for just a second. It wasn't your fault that there's a myth that successful salespeople are born, not made. If your career in sales has stopped being fun, then you are responsible for redefining what that career looks like to you. You have to decide what you want to be and how you want to get there. I'm just offering you the tools to make it better and to make it happen. So why not try my 7-figure sales formula? I'm inviting you to give it a shot and make it count in your bank. Go to cgittimer.com, cgittimer.com, and I'll see you in September.
We might have different plays. If it's a football team, hey, we know it's 4th and 2 on the 20 with X amount of time. You have one play, I have another, but we know what the common goal is.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, diehards, and welcome to a premiere edition of Sell or Die, America's premier sales and personal development podcast. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling. I wrote the Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute. Welcome to Sell or Die. Thank you for pushing play. We have so much amazingness in store for you today, right now, because our guest is Michael Padone. He's the founder, CEO, and head instructor at salesbuzz.com. And guess what, you guys? He's already been on our show once, and that episode is one of our top three, number one most downloaded episodes.
Wait, how could he be in the top three and be number one?
No, he's not number, he's like one of the top three most downloaded episodes.
It was a damn good episode. That's what you're saying.
It was. And he's back with new stuff to tell us, new strategies. He's going to be here talking all about cold calls, how they've changed, how they haven't changed, if there's any generational disconnects between those who cold call and those who don't, techniques for younger generations to get into cold calling, and some of the worst strategies to employ when cold calling, because you don't want to do those, and some of the best ones, the newer ones. Basically, he's just going to tell you how to make a damn good cold call and then make a sale from that. Can you tell?
On the phone. Yeah. So, he's not banging on doors. He's banging on people's desks.
That's right. Can you tell I'm fired up? Because this is an amazing episode. But before we get there, should we read a 5-star review?
Nope, we're going to let Adam read it.
All right, Adam, let's hear it.
All right, well, if I have to, I've got a review from Mike Carroll. It's entitled Love, Love, Love. He writes the following. Even though I've been a sales pro for many years, Sell or Die still delivers incredible insight, inspiration, and a couple of much-needed laughs for anyone toughing out the true sales existence. I highly recommend for any salesperson of any level.
Whoa.
Yeah. I love that.
That's a pretty damn good one.
I love that.
I know. Mike, we're sending you your $5 million check. Anybody else who wants to? It's a million per star.
Oh, man. All right. We love that. Thank you. And literally love that. Let's get into the interview.
I was just going to say that, Jen. So, ladies, gentlemen, diehards, please welcome the great Michael Padone.
All right, let's get into it. So, since you were last on in June of 2018, how, if at all, has cold calling changed?
I don't think cold calling has changed since the beginning, really. I mean, most salespeople are always trying to ways not to do cold calling, and then they learn techniques that are still cold calling, but they just label them something else. Like this whole thing of researching a prospect on LinkedIn and learning about them, and then they label it warm calling.
It's a freaking cold call. Yeah.
The simplest thing is this. The definition of a cold call is contacting any prospect that is not currently raising their hand. And that's that. Now, with that being said, so that means you can do all the research you want and whatever, but if you can even get referrals, right? You can call your best client, say, who do you know that should know about me? Get a couple names, but when you call them, if they weren't asked to be in contact, still a cold call. Nothing wrong with that.
So is that actually a referral then, or is that more like a lead?
It's just still a cold call.
Yeah.
It's still a cold call, right? Because you got to go back to the definition. You know, here's the only difference is, if you an organic referral is when somebody contacts you, said, hey, I was speaking to so-and-so, they used you, and they said great things. No, I'm interested. That's a warm inbound organic referral. You can't really scale that. That just has to happen by you being really good at what you do. And those are the cherries on top of the ice cream sundae when those happen. For everybody else, if you have to prospect, you got to get out of this, I don't like to cold call thing, because it's killing your commission checks. You just have to know what to do and how to sell, and you're going to start making money, whether it's an inbound warm lead or cold call.
But isn't there a way that I can look at 25 customers that I have mm-hmm. right now, see what kind of business they're in or what kind of category they fall in, and then target categories or target people rather than, you know, I can go in LinkedIn and target rather than have to, you know.
Absolutely. It's still cold calling, though. Yeah. It's what it is. It says, the person that I learned this from, first of all, I was always a good closer for whatever reason, Jeff. When I got into sales, I was very good closer, but I hated cold calling. But just like anybody, you think you're a great salesperson if you have somebody that's interested in buying, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there are differences between being an order taker and being a closer. I did have the closing down. The cold calling, I didn't want to do. One of my mentors taught me that, listen, and let me just, I may have shared this with you before in the past, but I was working for DuPont Registry in the online division. You know who they are, the magazine. They have all the autos, the Lamborghini stories.
Yep.
And they were creating the online sales version of Auto Trader for them, right? And so what he taught me to do is like, listen, get our new monthly magazine, go through it, look at all the ads that are full page ads, make a list of all them and only call them. He says, all the ones that are doing a half page or a quarter page ads, they don't have any budget. They're not sure this is for them. Don't even waste your time with them. Focus on the people who are already spending money and then show them how they can be more successful with another option as well. And it was like, oh, it's cold calling, but it's targeted, right? It's just a smart way to do it. So if you're anybody that is in selling, all they have to do, if you're a new sales rep, you go to your company that just hired you and have them run a report, if they don't know this already, on all the top companies in the last year that's bought from them, and then use some of the tools that are out there that'll identify the basics: geographical location, annual revenue, industry size, employee size, and what are the top two or three titles of the people who are almost always involved in the conversation. And then now you're going to be off. You'll have what I call an ICP, an ideal customer profile, that you can get started with.
Is there a specific tool you use to identify those?
One of the ones I use right now, and I don't get any kickbacks for this, but since you asked, one of the ones I use right now is called DataNyze.
DataNyze?
Yeah, DataNyze or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Right? All it does, and I think there's Clearbit. There's a couple other ones that are out there as well. All it does is it analyzes, it goes off the URL or the email address, as long as it's a business email address. And in my Salesforce, it'll pre-populate their, the key metrics: industry, annual revenue, employee size, right? And location.
Yeah.
And then what I do is I'll just filter it. Like, computer software is like one of my number ones. Like, I have like 87 different industries I help, but like computer software is like one of the top ones. And then if it's I know from 100 to 250 employees in the United States, I could filter any one of those and start calling, picking up the phone and start making money.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
I think you should redefine the word cold call. Just get rid of the word cold and substitute anything else.
Okay. Well, I think what needs to happen is people need to get rid of the fear of it. And all these, Jeff, you know this better than anybody. You've been at this game long enough. You know there's a lot of people out there that'll say not to do something because they suck at it and they're trying to hawk whatever it is that they offer.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's cold, warm, or hot. You know what I mean? They just need to know how to sell. Now, and by the way, I'll be the first to admit, I'm sure you would too, is that I would rather sales teams deal with inbound warm leads all day long. And if their marketing team can do that, that's great. But the problem is this. A lot of salespeople think if it's an inbound warm lead, they think it's all, they're ready to buy. And they and the, you know, the thing we were talking about offline was a lot of these sales reps, whether it's cold or warm, they still don't know how to identify if they're the real decision maker, especially on a warm lead.
Well, let's talk about that. How do you identify the real decision maker?
It's so simple. It's crazy. Okay. So the first thing is first, if you're going to identify who the real decision maker is, you have to understand this, this first thing first here. There's five categories that every prospect you ever speak to will fit in as it relates to their role in the decision-making process. So let me see if I can simplify this and say this again. As it relates to a prospect's role in the decision-making process, every prospect you ever speak to will fit into one of five categories. You want to know what they are?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first one's very simple. They're the ultimate decision maker. What does that mean? It means that they don't have to check with anybody. So if I'm speaking with Jeff and I says, Jeff, and we're talking about a CRM system, he doesn't have to check with anybody. This is what we're using. Let me just give an example, right?
I have to check with Jen.
No, you don't. Well, no, you don't.
He's not even going to use it.
All right, go ahead.
All right.
Keep going.
Okay, Mr. Decision Maker.
Ultimate Decision Maker. Company owner.
Yeah, whatever.
You own the guy, the person. Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With that being said, notice you. I didn't go off of a title. I just know Jeff enough to say that, right? But here's the thing. So we'll get into the title scenario.
He doesn't
in a
really know this, our roles here.
No.
The second thing is this, is they're part of the decision-making team. What does that mean? Well, what that means is this. They have a vote. You need and want their vote, but their vote alone does not get the deal done. And so here's the thing. That could work in a large corporation where there's like a board of directors. It could also work in a small business where, let's say for you two, for example, anything over a certain amount, you've agreed that you both have to sign off. Right. So as a sales rep, you can't assume just because you're speaking to the owner of a small business, if they're a partner, that they can make the decision. They might have had an agreement. You have to find out. If it's a larger company, you go ahead, Jeff. I see you raising your hand.
Just because it's a man doesn't mean there's not a woman who has more influence in that
That's
process
right.
than you do. And we, if you're the we group, the over 50 group, you're assuming that some man is going to make the decision when, in fact, women now have as much or more influence in the decision-making process than men do.
Thank you.
Totally agree. And that's another reason why this is more important, because it takes the gender out of it, right? It goes off of their role. They're either the ultimate decision-maker, they're part of the decision-making team. Again, this is important, meaning that they have a vote. You need and want their vote, but their vote alone does not get the deal done.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're as part of the decision-making team. Here's where everybody goes wrong. Then third one is influencer. The influencer, this is the difference between an influencer and somebody that's part of the decision-making team. An influencer has the ear or ears of the decision-maker or decision-makers, but they do not have a vote. And most salespeople, if they have deals in their pipeline that are taking longer than they thought they should have, and they're trying to follow up and they're not hearing back and it gets pushed from one quarter to the next or whatever, almost it always falls down to one of two problems. One, they never got problem recognition, meaning they never got buy-in to solve the problem. Or two, they mislabel. They put the person down as a decision maker and they're really an influencer. Now think about it this way. If they were really a decision maker, why every time do you call them, do they say they're still waiting on so-and-so? And yet you're telling your manager, you're speaking to the decision maker, but really they don't even have a vote. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Total sense.
Now, the fourth one is they're an end user. An end user will often benefit the most, but has no influence or voting power. And then the fifth one, this is usually on inbound warm leads. This is why warm leads, you can't assume they're ready to buy. The fifth one's an information gatherer. And a lot of times an info gatherer, they call and have a chip on their shoulder and act as if they're the real decision maker. Right? They start saying, I need your best price on this. They're just an intern, whatever. They get a couple of prices. They send it to the decision makers. And now you lose the deal by $100 because you didn't know how to properly handle that. So,
but could info gatherers also be influencers?
So here's how, that's a very good question. So here's how this works. An influencer right? They have the ear of that to try to influence it. The info gatherer was just told, hey, go get me some information on this. They have no vested interest or whatever. It's just, here's the information, and here you go.
My boss asked me to call to find out what your speaking fee is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We hear that all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So you're speaking to an info gatherer, and maybe not. Now, if it was somebody that's, hey, Jeff, I'm interested in having our team or myself and my team come see what's your speaking fee so I can run it by my boss. Now that's more of an influencer.
Yes.
Because they're more of an influencer. Hey, I really want to do this.
Now, Jeffrey, there's something we need to talk about.
You, Jen?
No, this is not about me. We can save that for later.
The quiz?
Yeah, so you made this really neat quiz, and it's free. It's called Are You Destined for Sales Success?
Like, hundreds of people have taken it. The answers are pretty interesting.
Like 100 people took it in the first hour of you releasing it.
Got it.
Okay, that is freaking amazing. Oh,
the quiz has always been the most popular part of Sales Caffeine. There'll be thousands of people taking it by the end of this week. But the bottom line is, for you, the diehard, this is a chance for you to test your own skill. And when you whether you get the answer right or you get the answer wrong, I've given you a little bit of insight about what the answer could be and challenge you that there are deeper answers, and you can find those out too if you're willing to click the link.
All right, so here's where you can find the Are You Destined for Sales Success quiz. You can either join our free Sell or Die Hard's official Facebook group. It's on Facebook.
Really?
Wait. Facebook group.
Our Facebook group is on Facebook?
I know.
Oh, my.
Revolutionary, I know.
Okay, that's cool.
Or you can get the quiz by checking the show notes. Or, since I know so many of you don't check the show notes, you can just go to sellordiepodcast.com and click on the link to that free quiz, because it's all about your sales success. And don't you want to know what kind of achiever you're going to be? Come on.
There's only a half a dozen questions, and I can promise you this. The answers are not obvious. If you're a good salesperson, you're still going to get a couple of, let's just say, different answers than I would have chosen.
The harsh reality of this, which is oftentimes you may think you're speaking to the ultimate decision maker, but in reality, you're speaking to the influencer. So for our diehards who have just discovered they're truly speaking to the influencer and not the decision maker, what should they do?
Well, we got to back up for a second, because a lot of your people are going to go, hey, great. That's that's the next question after they go, we still haven't answered, how do we identify what role they are?
Ah,
we
just identify. Okay. Go for it. Go for it.
Okay. Cool. So those are the categories. Now, here's how you identify what role they really are in. It's a two-step process. Once you get problem recognition, now you're in a perfect position to go ahead and identify their role. And I do it this way. I simply go, it's two questions. You ready? The first question is tried and true. It's similar. You could change the verbiage a little bit, but it's basically, so Jen, let me ask you this. Other than yourself, who else is involved in the decision-making process on something like this? Now, before you answer, we're not done, okay, but that's just the first question. Now, 90% of the time, I mean, I'm assuming 90% because I've seen this all the time. The majority of the time, the prospect is going to say what? It's their decision.
Oh, it's just me. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just me. It's my decision. The problem is, I don't necessarily think they're lying on purpose. I think that a lot of times it's their department or whatever, and their definition of a decision maker is different than yours. Now, Jeff's going to say they're lying all the time, right?
Okay, no, I'm not going to say they're lying all the time, but they want to inflate their own self-worth to a point where, you know.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
I don't even think they think they're inflating it. They think that's their self-worth.
Right. No, here's the deal. This is what they'll say. I'm the decision maker. I run it by the boss, but he always takes my recommendation.
Okay. Well, I have a solution for that, but let's back up for a second. Because most of the
time, you hear that an awful lot.
It's my budget. I make the decision.
Yeah. And I just have to run anything after $20,000, I run it by the boss, but he always takes my recommendation. Unless he has a friend in the business, and then he tells me to fuck off and die.
And have a nice day.
Right.
So, with that being said, you guys gave like three different scenarios that could happen on the phone, right?
Okay.
And I have a solution for each one of them. So let's just back up for a second. I asked Jen, other than yourself, who else is involved in the decision-making process? Jen goes, it's my decision, it's my department, whatever.
Yep.
Okay. Now, before I do anything else, here's where the sales reps, the average sales rep makes a mistake. They assume that they got the decision maker now based on what you said.
Right.
And so now they go, check mark, I got the decision maker. And then they go through the whole process. And then they go for a close at the end and they hear, I got to check with so-and-so. And right. Now the problem is this, is they're stuck like a deer in headlights because the prospect is either telling the truth or they're lying. Those are the only two choices. And if they're telling the truth and the salesperson tries to handle that as an objection, they're going to jeopardize the relationship they've been trying to build. If the prospect's lying because they're not sold yet or bought into solving the problem and the prospect doesn't try to handle it, they might not ever get the prospect on the phone again, right? So that's a problem you want to avoid. And here's how you do it. So once you ask on yourself who else is involved, you get your answer. If they say it's just them or some version of that, you have to run what I call the fast forward technique. The fast forward technique is going to go ahead and expose it. It works like this. Watch this. So you just said it's your decision and I'll go, okay, so cool, Jen. So let me ask you this and assume for a moment that you end up liking what it is that we have to offer. And let's say you decide you want to move forward with it. What happens next? Where do we go from there? Now, if Jen goes, well, if I like it, I got to run it by my boss. She's not the decision maker, even though she just said she was the decision maker 15 seconds ago.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. Like, totally cool.
Well, what if she says,
I have different words, but go ahead.
You well, what if questions. She or I were to say, oh yeah, I just then move forward. Do you believe then, me then?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a double confirmation at that point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and when you do it in a conversational way, when you get, see, right. Here's the other thing.
No one's Jeff, intimidated if you don't push.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing, like Jeff's really good at just having a conversation. It's one of the things that you've been so successful. You just get people to open up and have a real conversation. If you're reading even though these are sales scripts for me, these are plays, right? I have them memorized, but yeah, I have them written down too. But if you sound like you're in this situation, okay, I'm going to read this, you're going to create distrust. You follow me? Where
totally.
They can tell you're,
yeah.
Right? So you have to practice this stuff to where it's second nature. And then you're just having a conversation. You're peppering these questions. They're answering. They're going to answer honestly. So, yes. So when I run the fast forward technique and they go, well, if I'd like it, we just order it.
Yeah.
Okay. I got the person. And I found out the person process. Now I can move to the next step. It's really that simple.
Okay.
So that's how I'll identify their role. Now, at least I know they said they were a decision maker. I ran the fast forward technique. I realize they're really not the decision maker. Now, where do most salespeople go wrong when they find out they're not speaking to the real decision maker? Right here, because they go, well, can I speak to your boss? What's the number one answer they get back?
He doesn't laughing? Talk to people. He, you know, you have to.
Oh, no, I'll just present it to my boss.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Okay, so there's two scenarios there. First of all, if you ask to speak to their decision maker, get the decision maker right there, the number one response you're going to get is no. It's a failed strategy. I don't know why salespeople still do this play. It doesn't get the results that they want. You need to go the opposite direction. Most people will give you their opinion if you ask them for it. So instead, what I do at that point, when I recognize that they said they were decision maker, I run the fast forward technique. They're really not the decision maker. Instead of me trying to ask for their boss where I get a no and the conversation comes to a screeching halt, I ask the person I'm speaking to, their opinion. And my opinion is going to be, or my question is going to be something like this. Well, Jen, what are the top three things most important to you in selecting a solution to help you solve XYZ? Okay. Right. So I keep the conversation going. I focus you where I want you to be. I'm asking your opinion on what are the top three things most important to you to pick the right solution. You give them to me. I'm going to write them down. I'm going to feed it back to make sure that I got it right and also so that you know I'm listening to you. And then once I ask you, do I have it right? And you say yes, now I'm gonna say, okay, when it comes to your boss, other than price, what's most important to him or her? Now here's the thing. I already know ahead of time, you only have two choices. Your answer is only gonna be, it's either I don't know, or it's going to be an answer. It's, well, this right. is what's most important. And I don't care which it is. Because when I get that, right? So watch this. If they go, well, what's most important to him is blah, blah, blah. That gives me an indication that, you know what? This subject might be a little hotter than I thought because they've obviously been talking about it. And so I'm going to take that information. I'm going to be able to use it to influence him to get the decision maker involved. If they say they don't know, that puts me in a perfect position too, because now I'm going to run a play that I call Influence the Influencer. Do you want to hear it?
Hell yeah.
Okay. So now that I know they're not the decision maker and they don't know what's most important to them, they go, oh, I'm just not really sure. Notice because I said other than price. By the way, I don't want that to go that's a really good sales signal. No, you heard it, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
For everybody listening, the reason why my question was other than price, what's most important to your boss is because if I didn't say other than price, what's the number one response I'm
going to get? He's going to say price, yeah.
Exactly. So I'm playing chess and they're playing checkers, right? I'm going ahead and taking that off the table ahead of time. So now I go, other than price, what's most important? They go, yeah, I'm not really sure. They don't have an answer. I go, listen, I have good news and bad news. The good news is everything you're telling me for what the type of solution you're looking for, there's a very good chance I might have. Here's the bad news. If we continue to move forward like we are right now, you stand almost no chance of getting the solution you want. However, if we hit the pause button and see if your boss can hop on the call or if we can set an appointment to have a conversation with us, you stand a much better chance. How do you want to proceed? Now, they can only do one of, they can only answer one of three ways. Maybe you're seeing a pattern here. I like to answer questions where I already know what categories are. They can only answer this one of three ways. I'll hear, you know what? That makes sense. Hold on. Let me see if they're available. About 30% of the time, that's what I'm going to hear. Perfect. Which is way better numbers than can I speak to your boss, right? So they say, yeah, hold on a second. The second option, they'll go, you know what? That makes sense. Let's schedule a call so I can get him involved. Perfect. So now we set up an appointment with the decision maker. The third one is what you said earlier, Jeff. You hear, they go, yeah, I mean, it makes sense, but just run it by me first or something to that effect, or just give me the information, right? Here's what I do with that. I simply go, well, let me ask you a question. Is this something that they've asked you to look into, or are you just kind of taking the bull by the horns? If they're an influencer and the company asks them to look into it, I will move forward with that. I have closed a ton. I want to say a crap ton. I'm not sure what we say on the podcast, right?
Oh, we're E. It's okay.
Okay.
Not E for everyone. E for explicit.
E for explicit. I've closed a ton of people. If I've identified them as an influencer and they were asked to look into this, that's a whole other ball of wax. If I sell them on my solution, they're going to get a couple other solutions, but mine's going to the top. So I'm okay with that. If, however, they were an influencer and they go, well, I was just taking the bull by the horns. Listen, I've been a straight commission sales rep for 25 years. I've done my share of pitching to people with no power, no influence, that I'm not doing it anymore. Everybody listening to this podcast now and in the future, you have to realize you have to cowboy up in this scenario. And what I mean by that is you have to cut the call. You have to draw a hard line and go, you know what? I'd love to help you, but I can't. Without so-and-so being involved, I really can't help you. What I can do is I can send you some information, but if you really want to see, especially if you want to see if you qualify for some incentives, we're going to need to have the person that can make the final decision involved in the call. And guess what? If they get pissed off and rant or hang up or never call me again, I don't give a shit. Because chances are I would have had to pitch 1,000 of those people and that's one sale, maybe.
Right.
Okay. And but on the other side though, if I've done my job of getting problem recognition early on and really found out what's most important to them and I've got them step by step, you'll be surprised at how many people really want to hear the solution. Notice all this is done before I even present. Right. Because now they really want to hear my solution, but we're at this impasse. I go, listen, I'm going to need so-and-so to be involved. And then notice how I tease it, especially if you want to see if your guys are eligible for an incentive. I'm going to need to have so-and-so involved. So I can send you my basic contact information. And if you decide you want to set something up, just let me know. Is that fair enough? And they go, okay. They go, sure. And sometimes I get them and sometimes I don't. But at least I didn't spend my time doing a presentation to a non-decision maker with no influence, no power, and then filling out my pipeline and calling and calling and spending my days following up with them and then missing quota. Meanwhile, somebody that knows how to sell is sitting next to me making half the dials and doing double the numbers.
So I want to throw something at you, Michael, that you're very good at this. Don't diehards, please listen to every single word this guy says. He's not fucking around. He actually knows what he's talking about. And when you've cold call and you still have black hair and you've been cold calling for 20 years, you know what the hell you're doing. However, I have always found that when I'm speaking to somebody who I don't believe is the decision maker and they have told me that they're decision maker, I will ask, how will the decision be made? And they'll go through this diatribe of, We sit around a table and we look at the proposals and we, you know, we pick a person. Okay. And then I ask a two-word question that will define what happens for the next decade. I say, then what? Then, oh yeah, then we just take it to the CFO. I say, oh great, then what? Well, anything over 25,000, we have to go to the CEO. I want to know who's responsible. Okay. I also, there's another nuance to that. And that is, if you're dealing with a purchasing agent, which sometimes you are, or an information gatherer, I'm going to say, who is responsible for the outcome of this purchase? In other words, if I'm buying a copy machine, if I'm buying an insurance policy, if I'm buying a telephone system, who's responsible for the outcome? What happens after the purchase is made? And they're going to say, oh, it's the so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. And I say, great. Are they the trigger puller? And they'll go, well, no, that's Bob. And now I know. Okay, so I'm trying to talk to them in plain language, and I'm trying to get every person along the way. So now I know who's responsible for the outcome and who pulled the trigger. The decision maker, I never ask those words. I've never used decision maker in 25 years. I just say, who pulled the trigger?
I don't think you use those words either. I mean, you said, who else?
Yeah.
Who else is involved in the decision-making process? Remember that I said you can use different variations?
Yeah.
We're in agreement. Yeah. We might have different plays. If it's a football team, hey, we know it's 4th-and-2 on the 20 with X amount of time. You have one play, I have another, but we know what the common goal is.
And you have the shit Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I have the Philadelphia Eagles. When it's 4th-and-2, I know I'm going to make it.
They've won one Super Bowl in their entire time. You're still going to let that ride.
Ta-da!
All right, so I think you were going to talk about, once you identify what role they play, then how you deal with them.
Yeah, or how do you talk to them? And
influence the influencer?
So that was that whole play that was once I find out if I have to find, there's two types of influencers. I'm trying to stutter here. There's two types of influencers. There's the influencer that was asked to look into and given a little bit of power. And then there's an influencer. They're not an end user, but they're more of an influencer, but they weren't asked to look into it. I'm not going to present or pitch.
Okay.
Right. So now I have to identify, because I've had very large deals come my way where if I would have taken the hard line stance of, they're not the final decision maker, I'm not talking to them, I would have lost out on them. Because the person's up of the, like, I have some Fortune 500 accounts where those top execs, they have the people underneath them. Hey, go look at this. It's a high 6-7 figure deal, right? But they're doing the research, but they have the influence. But all I had to do was ask, is this something they asked you to look into, or are you just kind of taking the bull by the horns? That's a critical step. Am I going left or am I going right? If they go, no, they asked me to look into this, I'm moving forward with that. And now all along the way, I'll pepper in. So once this happens, what happens next? Where we go from there? So it's the same thing what Jeff would do in that scenario. Okay, well, once if I like it, I take it to this, and then it's going to go for this. Okay, cool. But I'm getting all this information.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
You have to have all the information, because as a salesperson, if you don't have all that, you're going to miss a very important step along the way, and someone's going to feel left out, and they're not going to speak kindly of you. They're going to try to do this. They're not going to take – I've been the office manager here for 25 years. I know what the fuck is going on. You're going to get that kind of thing. You have to know who's responsible for the outcome and who pulls the trigger.
So
if you know those two things, you're going to find the decision maker and the major influencer.
I love that you started this entire conversation by saying that you used to have a fear of cold calling, and now you're literally schooling us on how to get to the decision maker. So – how did you overcome that fear? Because I think telling that story might be helpful for a lot of other people.
I had no choice. First of all, this what I'm teaching you, it's imperative that the sales teams do it on the inbound leads as well. Let me just say this, not just cold calling. You have to follow the same process. Okay, but with that being said, to answer your question, I had no choice. I grew up on food stamps, right? I barely graduated high school. I never went to college. You know, I didn't want to live like I grew up when I knew someday I was going to grow up and have a family. And I didn't want my kids to worry if the car was going to start or where food was coming from. You know, so I had sales. One thing I love about sales is you can the lifestyle that you can imagine is achievable. You just got to get really good. So whatever, you know, I literally, when I first met my wife before we got married, I was like, you know what? Let's drive around to some of these fancy neighborhoods. She's like, in our beat up car, we're going to the open house is, right? They're looking at us funny. She's embarrassed. Why are we here? And I go, I promise you, we're going to live like this one day. But it was all about visualization. I would drive around, I would see it, and I would get to sale. And then I would just work my ass off. I didn't care if it was cold call. Listen, when I first got into sales, this is how insane this is. One of my first inside sales jobs was selling to IT people, computer diagnostics. We didn't even have computers. Our leads were on, we called them white sheets. We had white sheets where people, the company would advertise in like a PC magazine, and they would have those little cards that you filled out.
Yep.
And hey, I want some free information. They would send it in, and then they would get them in, and they would scan them into a system, and then they would put the information on. So you'd have like five leads here, five leads here, so two rows, and ad nauseum. I mean, do you know how many times I would call? I would just get my white sheets, start calling, and they would say, the person on the other side goes, is this so-and-so from this company? And how many effing times I told you guys not to call? It's like, my first day on the job, they've been called 100 times. I didn't care.
Right.
Just going to, so to answer your question, how do you overcome the fear of cold calling is, listen, you have to, I said it earlier, you got to cowboy up. I mean, how bad do you need this?
Right.
Exactly. I think
Or want it.
You know?
Do you think that there's a difference between the different generations? Like, I grew up talking on the phone. That was all I knew in terms of communication. And now I look at like Jeffrey's daughter, and her form of communication as a 10-year-old is DMing me on Instagram.
Yeah. So here's the thing. So I know millennials get a bad rap sometimes. I think.
Jeez, I wonder why.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Here's my take. I think we can learn from them, and they can learn from us. And what I mean by that is this, Jeff, our generation was, you know, the people before us, they worked for their entire lives at one organization, showed loyalty. And at the end of the day, when it was time to retire, they got a watch and kicked out the door, and that was it. And they thought that was the way to do it. And our generation came along and said, fuck this, man, I'm going to start my own business. Right. And we would just get in there. We would make things happen, and we'd speed that process up. Now, millennials come around. They want shit like right now and don't have to do anything for it. Right. I think we can learn from them. There's ways that we could make it go even faster. What they can learn from us is they're going to have to put the sweat equity into it. They're going to have to put the sweat equity into it. But I think there's ways to be a little bit quicker about this. In today's day, there are so many easy ways to generate high quality leads for nothing. That company I told you I started when I was cold calling first, they had to spend $10,000 a month for 12 months guaranteed to advertise in that PC magazine. Oof. Okay.
Yeah. To get leads.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing a 15-minute session on tomorrow's summit for inside sales, right? I'm going to generate 5,000 leads by giving away 15 minutes of my time. It's not going to cost me anything but 15 minutes of my time, and I'm going to get about 5,000 leads out of it. That's the power of today's technology and the marketing, and you can set up webinars and generate all this stuff. But the problem that salespeople need to know is, okay, once you have these hot leads or whatever, what do you do with them? People are too stuck on if it's a cold or a hot or inbound or outbound. They just need to know how to freaking sell, and they're going to make a lot of money, which goes back to Jen, your question earlier was, I mean, if they're just satisfied with a base salary of 40 grand and some bonuses here and there, and they're okay with it, then and living with their parents. I mean, I don't discourage people living with their parents. I think they should do that as long as they can and bank money. But, you know, you got to have some drive if you're in sales. When I had my previous company and I would interview for salespeople to come on board, I would simply ask one question. Why do you want to be in sales? And if they started telling me the scripted answer that was on monster.com.
I like people.
Yeah. Oh my God. If they would say, oh, I'm a people person. I really like people. I'm like, why the hell are you going to sales? It's high rejection rate. You should be in a concierge service if you like people.
Exactly.
Right? The people that said, I want to make bank. I want to make money. You're hired.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the question. That's what the answer should be. But now it seems like it's like, I think it's starting to swing the other way, but it got to a point where, hey, if you wanted to make money, you were looked at as a bad person recently. I'm like, why?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, totally crazy. can I do a summary, just a short summary?
Yeah, go for it, Jeffrey.
I listened with interest to what Michael has to say, because he's actually a person, and diehards, you need to listen closely to this. He's actually a person who knows what the hell he's talking about. And he knows what the hell he's talking about because he has practiced his own strategies to a point to where he owns them. He is going to get 5,000 leads tomorrow.
Yeah.
5,000 leads tomorrow. Here's his strategy. He's going to offer some kind of value that mm-hmm. will be attractive to the person who is listening. Mm-hmm. Once he gets that value and the person connects in some small way, he's then going to find out who. He's then going to find out who else. And then he's going to use two strategies that most salespeople fail to use. One is sales balls, and he's got plenty of them. And the other is work your ass off.
Yep.
And he does both of those to a point where he has become successful, where other people can have all the other information but fail to work their ass off. Mm-hmm. They think it's going to just show up, and it's not going to show up. You have to dig in and get the job done. And my hat is off to Michael, who doesn't know any other way than working his ass off. Is that correct? I mean, when you started out.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I love that. That was a good summary, Jeffrey. Nice. And Michael, I think one of the most interesting parts of this is how strategic your questions are and how well thought out the potential answers could be. So when you said, like, okay, I'm going to ask this question, and I already know there's one of three different types of answers. That to me is like, okay, wow, he really is playing chess. He's a step ahead of whatever it is they're going to throw his way.
I need to throw one other thing in here too, which I think is really important in today's world. When Michael and I started to sell, there was nothing. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a cell phone. There wasn't a fax machine. There was fucking nothing. And you dug in order to get whatever you got. And we are still using that strategy along with all the technology that exists. And the salesperson today may only use the technology and wonder why it ain't working.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is they ain't digging.
Well, yeah. I'm curious now that we've probably blown up your ego because we think you're the greatest. But what's next on your visualization list? Like, what are you looking at now?
You know, for me personally, what I want to do is I want to grow the company without the big headaches of growing a company.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're asking me what my personal, like if you tapped into my brain, what's going on, what do I want to do personally right now is I want to grow sales, but I had it for like 10 years. I've enjoyed it. I love helping people. But now I'm like, how do I grow it without growing it the old way? Like my last company, I had to hire people. Then you have, you know, those kind of problems that come with hiring more people. You know, I sold it. I was fine with that. But right now my visualization is growing this to where I can be more readily available to teach and share my stuff with the masses. And so that's what I'm working on.
Cool.
Is that digital? Is that a digital answer?
Yeah. I mean, well, the thing is this, I mean, Jeff, when I first got my first idea in Sales Buzz, and I think we and I talked about this way long time ago. My first idea in Sales Buzz after I sold my first company is I took all of my knowledge. I put it into e-learning. I was going to put it on demand. And I was just expecting people to sign up and get the training. And if it's any other industry, that'll work just fine. But with salespeople, we have the attention span of a goldfish, right? So anything longer than a few minutes, we lose attention. So when I started to do the sessions live online, that's when things really took off. And so now I want to do a combination of doing them live and then having on-demand access. But like I said, I'm working on getting the footprint bigger so that I could start helping more people. And that's really what I'm looking at. I don't want to have to hire 50 sales reps and then grow it up, get funding and all that stuff, because it's not going to be fun. I've done stuff like that before. It's just not fun for me. I just want to help people and have minimal resistance in doing it.
Well, that was pretty darn good. I think he is as insightful a sales, I don't know what you call him. I don't like to use the word guru, but this guy's really, really good.
Yeah,
he's down
he
to
is.
Earth. He's pragmatic. He gives you information you can use immediately. Diehards, if you've really listened to this episode and you have any friends that are in sales, I would really recommend that you forward this or share this with as many human beings as possible, because Michael Padone actually knows what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah, I love it. And I you know, there's a lot of people out there that say like cold calling is dead or whatever. And I don't think it's dead. I think you just have to do it in the right way. You know, and decide, like, is that method right for you? For some people, they cold call all day and they get terrific, amazing results from it. For other people, they're like, I would never touch a fucking phone and cold call someone. And sorry for the cursing earmuffs, kids.
Which one?
And
oh.
Phone.
Got it.
But you know, like, you have to decide. And if you're going to decide to cold call, then Michael Padone is one of your guys to help you with that. I mean, he's just freaking amazing. I love him.
I think that his insight is valuable, and that any salesperson, whether they're cold calling face to face or on the phone, can use it. And that's why I recommend it. And that's why he will be on this show again.
Hell yeah.
I can promise you that.
Oh, yeah. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gitomer, and I'm challenging you to throw down the gauntlet, take the quiz, and make a sale, even if your ass falls off.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.